Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor with a quick programming note. In the first part of this episode, I'm going to round up the action from last week's Emperor's Cup matches involving J2 teams. Then John Steele will be talking about J2 with a special guest, and I'll be back at the end to fill in for Mike Innes on JTalk Short Corner. So, let's start with Sagan Tosu's trip to the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium to play Vanfore Kofu in the fourth round of the Emperor's Cup. The J2 side welcomed striker Bruno Paraiba back into the starting lineup for the first time since suffering an injury in late May. And welcomed is certainly the word, as he scored two goals in quick succession to give Kofu a 2-0 lead at half-time. The first, in the 33rd minute, was rather fortunate, as his shot from the edge of the area took a big deflection and gave Tosu's keeper no chance. The second, 4 minutes later, saw Paraiba get in front of his marker to tap in a low cross at the near post. Tosu halved the deficit in the 75th minute when Taisei Miyashiro converted a cross from the right, but any hopes of a comeback were extinguished immediately as Nagi Matsumoto won the ball just inside the Tosu half and lobbed the keeper from 40 yards. It finished 3-1 to Kofu, who have equaled their best ever showing in the cup by reaching the quarterfinals, where they will play Avispa Fukuoka. Tochigi SC narrowly missed out in their game against Kyoto Sanga. Yuta Toyokawa took advantage of sloppy Tochigi defending to put Kyoto ahead in the 6th minute, but Tochigi pushed forwards and were rewarded 30 minutes later when Ko Miyazaki headed in Kenta Fukumori's cross. It was 1-1 at half-time, a surprisingly bloody first half in which three players needed treatment for three separate incidents. Tochigi's Kosuke Kambe and Kyoto keeper Michael Wood took cuts to the head, while Miyazaki took a boot to the face in first half stoppage time and was down for several minutes with a nasty nosebleed. He was substituted at half time. Both teams attacked in an end-to-end second half, but it was Kyoto who got the winner in the 93rd minute. Shunpei Fukuoka put the ball across the face of the goal, and Tochigi keeper Kazuki Fujita inexplicably tried to kick it instead of use his hands. He missed, leaving Ishmaela with a tap-in and heartbreak for Tochigi. Zaspa Kusatsu Gunma went down 1-0 at home to Sanfrecce Hiroshima. The J2 side came close midway through the first half when a quickly taken free kick led to a chance for Shunpei Fukuhori that was deflected onto the crossbar and scrambled away. The only goal came in the 57th minute as Tsukasa Shiotani finished a move that he started, heading in a cross from the right. There weren't many shots on target in this one, and Gunma now have to concentrate on survival in J2. Avispa Fukuoka saw our fellow Kyushu side Vifara Nagasaki at the Transcosmos Stadium. Daiki Watari's shot from the edge of the area put Fukuoka ahead in the 11th minute. Asahi Uenaka and Ryohei Yamazaki went close for Nagasaki in the first half, but it was 1-0 at the break. Nagasaki had the better of the early part of the second half, with several near misses, including one agonising ball that went across the 6-yard box and was somehow not knocked in by the player at the back post. Fukuoka weathered the storm, and Juanma Delgado shot past Gaku Harada in the 78th minute to seal the victory for the J1 team. There's one game yet to be played. It's due to play on this Wednesday the 20th, Tokyo Verdy against Jubilo Iwata. It was postponed from the 13th due to the coronavirus outbreak at Verdy, but the club seems to have restarted training, so the game should have been played by the time you hear this. That's all for the Cup. Up next, John and his special guest to talk about J2.
Hi everyone, John Steele here, taking over from James for the J2 roundup for this week's JTET. And I'm joined by a very special guest this week, a first timer on the pod. It's Gary Irwin. Gary, how are you doing?
Thanks for having me, John. Yes, long time listener, first time on, so
yeah, excited. Fantastic, yes. Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Gary, and I apologise for talk the hind legs off a donkey before we actually press record. So I apologise for keeping you up very late. But Gary, just before we get into the J2 kind of roundup, it's your first time on the pod, so could you just give the listeners a quick one or two point intro? I know you're based in Kumamoto, so we're going to talk heavily about Ruasso this week, but anything that the listeners need to know?
Yes, I've been in Kumamoto my whole time in Japan, so it's about 7-8 years now, and I've been going to every Ruasso home game, I think, since I got here, so maybe 7 years, and I've been a season ticket or season seat holder for the last 4 seasons, and it jumped up in price again this year because we're back in J2, soon to be J1.
Fantastic, fantastic. That's the kind of confidence that I hope carries us on a wave for the rest of the pod. Okay. Well, Gary, thanks for the intro. And in the true JTalk fashion, we've brought you on to talk Kumamoto. So we're going to start with a different game, if that's okay, for our review of round 27. The usual pattern, we're going to chat about three of the big games, the eye-catching games for the weekend. After that, we'll take a quick break for some drinks. I'll do a solo, drop in a solo roundup of the rest of the action, and then we'll get back together and take a quick look at round 28 coming up next weekend. But first stop for us, Gary, has to be at the top of the table, I think, from last weekend. Kanazawa 0, Niigata 3 is the game we'll talk about first. I just watched the highlights of this game, but it looked like it was about as comprehensive a victory as you can get at this level, although Niigata did have a little bit of help from the referee right at the start of the second half, didn't they? From the start, it was clear that Niigata were well up for this game and, to be honest, a better side than Kanazawa. I think I can say that because James isn't here and might not listen this week. The only real surprise was that Niigata were only 1-0 up at half time, and the goal came from quite an unlikely source. Takahiro Ko, he drilled in his first goal of the season off the post in the 28th minute. So Niigata 1-0 up and dominant at half time. The key moment really came in the 48th minute when Niigata were awarded a penalty. Now, Kanazawa centre back Honoya Shoji clipped Eitaro Matsuda outside the penalty area, at least half a yard inside, but the referee, who in my opinion was in a poor position well behind the play, pointed to the spot and gave a penalty that was coolly converted by Koji Suzuki, and that gave Kanazawa a mountain to climb at 2-0. The hosts gave it a good try, gave it a good go, but ended up conceding a third goal after they gave the ball away in midfield. Rookie Niigata attacker Yota Komi setting up Suzuki to roll in his second of the game, and Niigata's third. Best chance for Kanazawa fell to Masamichi Hayashi late on after a complete brain fart from Michael James gifted possession to him on the edge of the box, but there was a good save by a goalkeeper Yosuke Kojima and the chance went away. So it finished Kanazawa 0, Niigata 3. Niigata stay top of the table, level on points with Yokohama FC, and perhaps ominously, those two are both 14 points clear of 7th place with 15 rounds or 16 rounds left to play. Kanazawa pretty comfortable in 13th. Gary, what do you make of Niigata generally? And any comments on this game? Kanazawa 0, Niigata 3.
Niigata, they are looking strong at the top. And I think maybe this is the year they get back to J1. It's been 5 years now since they've been down in J2. But looking at this game, you were very generous with that penalty. It was so soft, and it was outside the box. I watched it back many times. It didn't look anything like a penalty. And after that, you could see Kanazawa's heads dropped. And once it was 2-0, they were out of sight, Niigata. But Niigata have a strong attack. I think it's the second best in the league. Sendai have the best attack, so Niigata have 48 goals so far, and they like to spread them around. So when Ko got his goal and Suzuki got 2 goals, yeah, Niigata, they have goals in them. So maybe this is the year they go back up. As for Kanazawa, I looked at their form and I thought going into this game, maybe they'd give them some trouble because they had 3 wins from, I think, 6 or 7 games, but those wins were against Gunma, Omiya and Morioka, who are all mired in relegation trouble. So Kanazawa, you said the 13th, they might drop further. I think they didn't play well in this game at all. Niigata dominated possession and shots, and they were well worth the win in the end, I felt.
Yeah, I think that's fair analysis. I think for Niigata, you mentioned them sharing the goals around. I think they kind of got a system, or they're in a groove where it doesn't really matter who is playing, whether it's Koji Suzuki or Kaito Taniguchi, who's, you know, the top striker, or they rotate some players in that row of three, you know, behind the main striker. It kind of, whoever plays, you know, if Eitaro Matsuda in this game was very dangerous, wasn't he? Coming down the right, and it doesn't matter if it's Yoshiaki Takagi or any of the other players. Yeah, they just seem to be really really in the groove. So it's, you know, 15 games or so left to play. You can imagine them sticking around fairly comfortably at the top of the table, for me anyway. And yeah, I think maybe as well, this was probably the first game, and it's obviously been announced unofficially, and now it's finally official. Shion Honma, probably the most exciting attacker, he's gone, hasn't he, to Club Brugge in Belgium. So perhaps there was, you know, that might have been something that came up in Niigata's kind of pre-match meeting of like, we need to show that we can do it without Shion Honma. And I think this was a very emphatic win. I know it was 3-0, but I think it could have been more. And for Kanazawa, yeah, they looked a bit tired, I think, a bit leggy.
Yes.
But I think a team like Niigata can do that to you. I think pretty much from the kickoff, Kanazawa were pinned back. And yeah, there was no chance for them to get any tentals, which is a bit of an in-joke. I don't know if... Are you across this, Gary? This Kanazawa had this 60s Britpop theme for this game.
Oh, did they? I didn't see that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll park that. We can talk about it in the post show in the green room. But all the tentals went to Niigata in this one. I think Kanazawa will be okay. I don't think there'll be any relegation trouble this year, which represents progress from last year, obviously, where they survived on the final day. But I think this was a really good indication of how far they need to go to be a sort of playoff challenger, I think, because the gap between these two sides on the night was quite big, I thought. So,
yes, okay. Yes.
Anyway. Gary, fantastic start. Good use of the word mired. I think we don't use that word enough on the pod, so that was excellent to hear. I'm going to move you on and then put the ball firmly in your wheelhouse to mix metaphors. We'll move on to the next game for our pick of the week from round 27. Kumamoto 1, Yamaguchi 0, the Monday night game. Toshiki Takahashi's 75th minute penalty was enough to earn Kumamoto a first home win for absolutely ages, since March, I think, and propel them into sixth place in the league table. It was a bit of a controversial decision, I think, as Naohiro Sugiyama went down a fraction late after some minimal contact from Yamaguchi centre-back Henan. But there was nothing wrong with Takahashi's thumping finish from the penalty spot, ninth goal of the season for him. I thought overall, based on watching the highlights, this game was fairly even. Kumamoto probably had the better chances overall. In the first half, Shohei Mishima had a shot deflected just wide for the hosts, while at the other end, Daisuke Takagi blazed wide when he should probably have hit the target. In the second half, Kumamoto's big centre-back, Masahiro Sugata, headed over when he should have scored, and they nearly hit the front when Talese's shot was spilled by a jittery Kentaro Seki in the Yamaguchi goal, but Koki Sakamoto's follow-up, the loose ball was just about cleared off the line, and Yamaguchi survived that one. Late on, Takahashi nearly added a second goal from a Talese cross, but a towering header, a trademark header from Takahashi, hit the top of the crossbar and the chance went away. But it finished Kumamoto 1, Yamaguchi 0. Kumamoto in 6th, level on points with Okayama. A very impressive kind of turn of events, that. And Yamaguchi are in 16th in the table. Gary, you're the man in Kumamoto. Kumamoto 1, Yamaguchi 0. Take it away.
Well, yes, as you mentioned, it's only our second home win this season. We've been in blistering form away from home, one of the best teams in Japan. You don't want to play us. You don't want us coming to your home ground. But at home, we've been giving up so many points. And yeah, even this game, it was very tight. It was very tight. It could have went either way. As you said, a penalty was what decided in the end. I don't think it was as soft as you mentioned, John. there was contact. He went down late, but yeah, it was a penalty for me. And yeah, Takahashi put it away for his ninth goal of the season. He's in good form. And we need that. Usually with Roasso, I've been following them long enough now, we start the season pretty well, and then our second half of the season, we usually drop off and fall down the table. And hopefully it's not enough to get relegated, which did happen a few years back. But I've seen us every season, we start strong and then have a second half drop off. And it hasn't hit yet. So hopefully Takeshi Oki has sorted that out, and maybe we can go for a strong second half of the season. Now, I'm not saying we're going to get promoted or even get the playoffs, but if we're there or thereabout. Of course, Oki, he got into the playoffs before with Kyoto Sanga, didn't he? I think.
Mm.
And Rowasa, our best finish ever, was seventh in J2, maybe going back 10 years or more. So if we're there or thereabouts, I'd be very happy with that. But we are playing some good stuff. If we can just turn around our home form, I would be very happy. Mm. Yeah, and the home crowd, which can get a bit titchy at times with some of our plodding pass performances. We haven't played poorly. Well, we haven't been beaten too badly, but we haven't really been putting teams away. Like, I feel we can if we wanted to. When Yamaguchi came here, it was another one of those games. Their form, they'd lost to Niigata, which we just mentioned Niigata. There's no shame in losing there. They drew at Oita. They beat Akita and Kofu. So it could have been a slippery one. So for us to get 3 points, I was very happy with that. Yeah, and we're up to 6 now. If we could hang in there till the end of the season, I would be over the moon.
No, good to hear that things are going well. Even Yuya Sato in goal hasn't been able to derail Kumamoto's charge up the table. And I take your point about the penalty. I think if that was if that was a Stoke City player going down in the box, I would see no problem with the spot kick either. So fair play. I was actually texting Gary earlier today with Johnny Nicol, famous J Talk and J Tech contributor. He wanted to ask, or he was basically feeding me questions to ask you. And what he wanted to know was, do you think Kumamoto have a genuine chance of getting a top six finish this season? Because obviously, 15 games to go, you're in sixth place right now. We've waxed lyrical about Fagiano Okayama on the pod quite a lot this season, and you've got the same number of points as them. So do you think it's realistic that you might finish in sixth and get into the playoffs? That'd be an amazing achievement for the first season back in J2.
It would be a great achievement. J2, for any team, it's, you want to see a team hitting form, which is very hard to come by in J2, J3. It's always win one, lose one, or a run of draws. And so you never know. If you can bank a certain amount of points in the last 15 games, maybe we could make a playoff run. There's so many teams between the cluster of teams in playoff contention all the way down to 13th to 14th in the table. There's about 10 points.
Mm.
And you like to see if even one of those teams could make a run, but no one seems to want to make that run at the moment, apart from the three teams at the top of the table.
Mm.
Could we make the playoffs? I see no reason from watching Rowasa home and away. We're not any worse than the group of teams around us, I don't think. And if we can keep our form away from home and just up our home form a little bit, then a playoff place, it's realistic. I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think just to add my own sort of two cents, really, I think that top three now, I mean, I'm not ready to say that they will be the top two at the end of the season, but I think, Niigata, Yokohama FC, Sendai, they will be in the top six, I think. I can't see them falling away to that would be an incredible collapse if any of those three doesn't finish in at least the playoffs. So I think there's kind of three places to be fought over. And I think, Nagasaki have been there for a while now, and I think Okayama have been in the top six pretty much all season, or in the playoff zone all season, so I think they'll probably make it. But that sixth place, or the last spot, I think there's, like you said, it's wide open for somebody over that last 15 rounds or so. So, we'll see. Hopefully we haven't jinxed it for you there. But, I think, Kumamoto, it's funny because they've been so sort of quietly efficient and effective in J2 this year that they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit. You sort of don't, as a non Kumamoto supporter, as a neutral, you just sort of don't really notice them in the table almost. And I think that's been an advantage as well, because I think they've kind of climbed up the table without really being noticed too much, I think. If that's fair to say. Who's the key player in the team, Gary? Who's the star player? Because every time I watch them, I notice Sou Kawahara with his passing in the midfield. I notice Toshiki Takahashi with his goals. Yuhi Takemoto as well, mm-hmm. and Sakamoto buzzing around him have been really impressive. Is there one player in particular? Johnny was asking, so many sort of good young players in the team. Is there one player in particular who you would... Obviously, you don't want to lose any of the good players from this season, but who is the key player who you really, fingers crossed, is still there next season?
Well, every season for the last few seasons, we keep losing our top goal scorer. So if Takahashi can keep this form and stay with us, then I'd like to see that. But he has 9 goals this season. But as you mentioned, yeah, Kawahara, the captain in midfield, he's been playing some great stuff. He's been like a metronome in midfield. Just gets the ball, turns around, passes it sideways and gets the team going. Who else is playing well? Maybe Shun Ito. He's contributed 5 goals. He was, at the start of the season, was mainly a sub. But he's started a lot of games recently. And he's been a goal threat. And he's a lively little player around the box to have. He's been playing well. And you mentioned him. He came on with 30 minutes to go against Yamaguchi. Was Thales, who hasn't been used at all so far this season, really. He's only started 2 games. And he's only came off the bench 5 or 6 times. But when he does, he's been a positive impact. And maybe if we use him more towards the end of the season, maybe Thales could be the spark that gets us the points. Yeah, even for his 30-minute cameo, he kind of changed the game on Monday night. So maybe if he can get in the team more, maybe Thales could be the difference maker.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Johnny mentioned Thales as well in my secret, now exposed, text conversation earlier today. But he's owned by, is it Nagoya? He was bought by Nagoya but then loaned back to Kumamoto for this season.
He's sold for this season. Yes.
Yeah. So he obviously, you know, he's caught the eye of a team at a higher level. I think, which you see, I think J2, there is not that many. You don't get too many players with genuine pace, you know, who can actually run at defenders and really worry them. So I think it's a really good asset to have. I've talked a few times with other podders like James about, and this is, we're going down a level from Tyler's here, but like someone like Paul Bismarck at Iwate, when he's brought off the bench for the last 20 minutes, just the fact that he can run with the ball and he's quick just causes defenders problems when they're tired. And I think in the heat that we're having as well, right, in the summer, that can be a really powerful asset to have. So yeah, all looking good, Gary. No problems at Kumamoto at the moment. So yeah, I hope it's an exciting end to the season, because I think fans went through the ringer a little bit, didn't they, with the relegation 2 years ago, and then to come back and then kind of slot into J2 so comfortably is it's a real achievement, because they've done it with you know not a huge playing squad, not a huge budget, loads of young players, and like you mentioned and like Johnny mentioned, the football has been produced, been pretty exciting, you know, pretty good technical football as well. So fingers crossed, and as I mentioned, hope it all doesn't go wrong after this chat. But fantastic stuff. Okay, Gary, anything else on Kumamoto before we move on? Do you have any sort of pitch, anything we've missed?
On Kumamoto, well, our next game is against Kanazawa, so we'll see if we do have the credentials to go up. Because as we mentioned earlier, Kanazawa, they're no great shakes. We should be beating them. But again, it's at home. We're not the strongest at home. But if we get a second win in a row at home, I'd be very happy. So Kanazawa's next game, it's one to look out for. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, James would, were he here, he'd probably point out that Kanazawa also have a reputation of being away specialists this season. You know,
they got 22 of their points away from home. They're stronger away from home.
Yeah, something's got to give. In that one, you feel. Yeah, it's going to be good. Okay. Yeah, I think James might have something to say about this conversation next week, Gary. We'll have to tune in to this. This is his riposte. We'll be swift, I'm sure. Okay, Gary, the last game for our sort of big pick of round 27. There's only one other game it could be, really, isn't it? The sort of big scrap at the bottom between Ryukyu and Omiya, which finished Ryukyu 1, Omiya 1. I think scrap is probably the right word, especially for the first half of this game. I don't think there was a great deal of quality. It was pretty typical for the bottom of J3. I think we would have made fun if it was touchy against Gunma, so we better make fun of it here as well. And it wasn't great. Not many chances in the first half, which was very cagey, very nervy. Although Almia nearly did go in front from a long throw just before half time. Danny Carvajal, normally very reliable, was sort of her positioning was all wrong on the Ryukyu side here, but Almia nearly scored, but the chance went away. So it was 0-0 at half time. In the second half, though, Ryukyu went ahead thanks to a volley from Takashi Kanai in the 50th minute. It looked as though Omiya's Hidetoshi Takeda had actually been fouled as the visitors were in possession, but play was waved on, and Ryukyu went on a quick counter-attack. Yuki Omoto crossed for an unmarked Kanai, yet to volley in at the far post. Plenty of Omiya players jogging back to cover here, but nobody sprinting. I'm not a professional football manager, but... yeah, guys, try sprinting maybe next time. You might have a chance of catching some of these quick attackers. Omiya did fight back though, and they were level. Just 10 minutes later, it was Takeda whose well-struck free kick came back off the crossbar, but it was straight to Shunsuke Kikuchi. Even he couldn't miss from there, and it was volleyed in for 1-1. And that's how the game stayed. There were a few chances and half chances for either side to win it after that. Maybe the best one came to Ryukyu when Omiya's keeper Ko Shimura bravely dived at the feet of Kazuya Takezawa late on. But yeah, the chance didn't go in. So it finished 1-1. Ryukyu stay bottom. They're 3 points behind the second bottom team, which is now Gunma, but they are 3 games unbeaten under new coach Nacho Fernandez, so that's something for them to build on. Almia are third bottom, 4 points ahead of Ryukyu, but a bit worryingly just 1 point ahead of Gunma. But they are 2 games unbeaten, 2 straight draws for them, so I don't know, I think we could spin that both ways. Gary, this was squeaky bum time, wasn't it? What did you make of this one?
Yes, a draw in the end. I was expecting more goals. I didn't think both sides would be... It was kind of a must-not-lose rather than a must-win for both teams. So they played with a little bit of fear, I thought, going by the highlights again. Ryukyu, maybe the happier, because Omiya did beat them in the league only a few weeks ago and knocked them out of the Emperor's Cup, if I remember, 4-1. So Ryukyu going into this game on 2 losses to... Omiya probably feel better, but then again, they were at home and you would expect them to be more proactive. Yeah, I expected more goals. In the time Ryukyu have been in J2, these two sides have shared lots of high scoring games. So for it to finish 1-1 kind of shows how tense this game was. Mm. Yeah, it really was a must not lose. As you mentioned, Fernandez says that's 3 games now for Ryukyu, who unbeaten, which is the longest run in the league, but they're both at the bottom and they're both not playing great stuff. Maybe they just need a goal scorer. They're not great in front of goals. They miss a lot of chances. So I'm looking at both sides, and I guess you can take positives. Both sides could take positives. They didn't lose, but I'm not hanging my hat on either of them to be climbing themselves to safety, shall we say.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there when, like, you kind of you said you expected more goals from this game. I think we sort of just have expected more from Ryukyu, and especially Omiya, like, all season, right? So there are plenty of good players in the squad, especially attacking players. You know, the front six for both teams is pretty decent, but you're just kind of waiting for them to produce something, and I don't know, for whatever reason it's not really happened. But I suppose they've still got time to right the ship and get out of it. But I'll talk about Gunma in a bit more detail when I drop in the solo roundup later. But of the teams that are down at the bottom at the moment, I mean, who do you think is in most danger? I suppose we're looking at, what do you think, Ryukyu, Omiya, Iwate and Gunma as maybe being the four... I don't know, worst teams seems a bit harsh, but you know what I mean. Who is two-thirds of the way through the season? What do you think?
For my predictions at the start of the season, I did put Ryukyu to go down. I thought they were due a bad season. They just finished last season really poorly, and it's continued on. So I think Ryukyu are going to go down, although with the new manager, maybe they could scrape together enough points. Let's see if this new manager Burns can do something. And I also thought Morioka might go down, but they've picked up a few points and climbed to 19th. But they were my two at the start of the season, so I'm going to stick with those two to go down.
Yeah. Okay.
But, Gunman, Omiya are not playing great stuff. I'd be worried if I was a fan of either side.
Yeah, I think Omiya kind of, they have previous for sort of just kind of somehow getting out of it, wriggling out of it at the last minute, last season, for example, quite recent example. So, yeah, I think you're probably right that they will sort of quite annoyingly and in a sort of underwhelming way probably get enough out of it. They'll probably, one of the forwards that they're picking that's not producing will get injured, and then Naoki Soma will have to play Atsushi Kawata from the start. And then they'll win some games, by accident. Ryukyu, I think it could click for them, but they were uncharacteristically tight at the back in this game, and that's not been a feature of their play for most of the season. So I still think they're going to ship a lot of goals, and that's going to put them in trouble. You mentioned a sort of form and momentum earlier, talking about the top of the table. I think it's equally true at the bottom, and I think Iwate, they might have had their good run like a bit too early, because they had a kind of six-game unbeaten run just before we headed into summer. And I wonder if they can, they've lost that momentum now. If they can get it back, they've got half a chance. They've shown that they can compete, but only in that kind of six or seven-game run, I think. So the jury's out on them. And Gunma, I have a feeling that they might be changing manager before too long, because I think they're on six straight defeats, aren't they?
Yes,
now?
They are, yeah.
If it goes to seven, which it may well do because they go away to Yamagata at the weekend, I think they possibly are just too scared of the manager, Ōtsuki, to get him into the office and sack him at the moment. But I think, he's quite an intimidating presence, obviously. He seems like a really nice guy, but just a bit, just have that look of the kind of gang boss about him, doesn't he? So, yeah, I think if they go to... Gunma's expectations for the seasons were probably fairly low, I think it's fair to say, but I think not as low as second bottom with 15 games to go. So I think he might be in big trouble, and then a new manager might give them a bounce to get out of it. So I think, still all to play for. I think you're right that Omiya will be happy that they've not lost this game, and perhaps Ryukyu the same, but we're reaching the point where they both need to be getting 3 points, don't they? So we'll see. Plenty to play for, I think. All right, Gary, I think we covered the three big games from the weekend very nicely. We didn't even mention the game that I went to, so that's good. I can save that for the solo roundup to build suspense. We'll take a quick recording break here, if that's okay. In a minute, you'll hear me do the solo roundup for round 27. But please stay tuned, because after that, Gary's going to join me again. We're going to preview the round 28 games coming up at the weekend. Extra time. Hi again, everyone. John Steele here again, rounding up the rest of the round 27 action from J2. Now, the top three sides all picked up big wins in round 27. We've talked about Niigata already, but there were goals galore for Yokohama FC and Sendai as well. Yokohama FC are still level on points with Niigata at the top of the table after beating Jeff Chiba 4-0 at home. Jeff nearly took the lead early on in this game, but misfiring striker Thiago De Leonso shot into the side netting when he should have at least hit the target. That was in the third minute, and that proved to be a costly miss as Yokohama went in front. Just 2 minutes later, Koki Ogawa heading in Heine's free kick at the far post. It has to be said, not the best goalkeeping from Shota Arai in the Chiba goal for that one. And it was 2-0 just after the half hour, with Takuya Wada sending Zane Isaka racing clear down the right-hand side. His low cross was controlled and then slammed into the net by Kazuma Watanabe. So Yokohama FC 2-0 up at half-time, and they made the game very safe with two goals in the space of 3 minutes in the second half. In the 61st minute, Watanabe sent Isaka away down the right again, and he crossed for Ogawa to confidently pass the ball into the net, beyond Arai. 18 goals for the season for Koki Ogawa. A brilliant return from him. 3 minutes after that, the ball broke nicely for Tatsuya Hasegawa, about 40 yards from goal, and with no defenders in sight, he lobbed the onrushing goalkeeper Arai and scored Yokohama FC's fourth. So Yokohama FC 4, Jeff Chiba 0, the final score. Meanwhile, Sendai, who are 3 points further back, thrashed Iwate 5-1 at Iwagin Stadium. This was a Tohoku derby, of course, so absolutely tons of Sendai supporters inside the stadium. It felt more like a home game for them at times. Iwate had a goal disallowed early on, but Sendai were 1-0 up at half-time thanks to a goal on the half-hour from Masato Nakayama, looping a header over home goalkeeper Kenta Matsuyama after a clever chipped through ball from Motohiko Nakajima. But Iwate drew level in fine style in the 53rd minute when Ryoma Kida gave the ball away inside his own half to Morelato. The Brazilian striker unleashed a 25-yard thunderbolt that flew past Daichi Sugimoto for 1-1. Sendai, though, retook the lead with a similarly impressive goal in the 64th minute. Takumi Nagara sending a superb shot in off the crossbar from a quite similar range to Morelato, about 25 yards. That was 2-1. And then Keiman Togashi, who'd come on for Sendai after about an hour, he was instrumental in helping the visitors pull away in the closing stages. In the 70th minute, he set up Takumi Mase, who slammed in an angle drive from the edge of the box to make it 3-1. And then Togashi scored twice himself. Firstly, he swiveled to fire into the bottom corner from about 12 yards to make it 4-1. That was in the 84th minute. And then he won and converted a 93rd minute penalty. He was brought down by Iwate goalkeeper Matsuyama for the spot kick and, converted it himself to move on to 8 goals for the season so far for him. And it finished Iwate 1, Sendai 5. Iwate in 19th place, 4 points clear of the relegation zone at the moment, but looking nervously over their shoulders, you have to say. 8 points behind Sendai in 4th place are Nagasaki, who had quite a lot of luck in their 2-1 win at Machida last weekend. Nagasaki went in front in the 9th minute in semi-controversial circumstances. Edgar Junior headed Hijiri Kato's corner against the underside of the crossbar, and the ball seemed to bounce down just about over the line. I thought it was over, and the goal was given by the referee despite the Machida protest, so Nagasaki 1-0 up in the 9th minute. Machida were level though straight after half-time thanks to a thumping strike from Shusuke Ota. No controversy about this one. When the ball dropped to him on the edge of the penalty area, he lashed in a right-footed shot from about 20 yards to make it 1-1, a brilliant finish. And Machida seemed the more likely to go on and win this match in the closing stages. Dudu saw a shot deflected onto the top of the crossbar from an acute angle, and Taiki Hirato, the captain, somehow put the ball over from close range as Machida threatened again. But it's often the case in football, mischances prove to be costly almost straight away, and that's what happened here as Nagasaki grabbed a winner in the 89th minute. Yuya Kuwasaki mishit a cross into the Machida penalty area from the left wing, and the ball looped perfectly over home goalkeeper William Pop to make it 2-1, and that's how it finished. Yeah, Machida 1, Nagasaki 2. Great win for Nagasaki, who are 9 games unbeaten in the league now and going well. Machida are in 8th, only 2 points off the playoffs, but a little bit out of form, 3 defeats from their last 4 matches. Fagiano Okayama stay 5th after a 0-0 draw at home to Tochigi. Very little to report on in terms of chances, so I think we can move on quickly. Defence is well on top overall in this game. Tochigi are in 17th, and 1 defeat in their last 7 matches. They're in good form, 8 points clear of the relegation zone at the moment. In the other games in round 27, Oita are 7th after a 2-1 win over a pretty sorry-looking Gunma side. Oita scored their goals at the perfect times at Showa Denko Dome. It looked like it was going to be 0-0 at half-time, but 3 minutes before the interval, Gunma defender Yuki Kawakami sliced Kazuki Fujimoto's cross into his own net to make it 1-0 to the hosts. Then, 3 minutes after the break, Oita threatened again when Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki had to block an effort from Hiroto Nakagawa, but the ball broke loose to Fujimoto on the edge of the penalty area, and he drove in a great shot with his right foot to make it 2-0. Gunma did pull a goal back about 8 minutes from the end, and it was a really nice goal as well. Akito Takagi's through ball sent Shunpei Fukuhori clean through, and he scored brilliantly from about 12 yards, but it finished Oita 2, Gunma 1. Gunma firmly in the bottom two now on a run of six straight defeats. They're 3 points ahead of the bottom side, Ryukyu, but of course that can change very quickly. They just need to get a point or a win from somewhere, don't they? Another side in poor form right at the moment are Akita, who lost 2-0 at home to 10th placed Yamagata in round 27, another Tohoku derby. The key moment in this match came midway through the first half. So in a foot race, Yamagata's Taiki Kato managed to get ahead of Akita centre-back Kaito Chida. When they came together right on the edge of the box, Chida brought down Kato for a free kick. Now, the referee initially showed Chida a yellow card for the foul, but after thinking it over, he upgraded it to red for a denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, dog soap, because Kato would have been clean through. Despite Akita protest, yes, Chida was sent off, and yes, the maximum punishment was inflicted, because from the resulting free kick, Shintaro Kokubu brilliantly curled the ball over the wall to make it 1-0 to the visitors. And it was 2-0 and pretty much game over just 5 minutes after that, with Kota Yamada playing a neat 1-2 with Yamagata's new signing Akira Disaro, the bald eagle. And then Yamada moved the ball onto his left foot and fired in from 18 yards. And yes, Akita did their best, but they just couldn't get back into the game with 10 men. It finished Akita 0, Yamagata 2. Quick trivia from this game. Akita, for some reason, played in their white away kit despite being at home. Yamagata played in their home kit despite being away. Whether there was some mistake in the kit bag or whatever, I don't know. But yeah, that was a bit of a weird one. Also, Akita's goalkeeper Yoshiaki Arai wore a baseball cap against the Sun in the first half. Can't remember the last time I saw that in the J-League, but we need more of that sort of thing, in my opinion. More goalkeepers in baseball caps. Anyway, yes, Akita 0, Yamagata 2. Yamagata 5 points off the playoffs in 10th. Akita 5 points clear of the relegation zone, but yeah, not looking too clever just at the moment. With Tokyo Verdy's home game against Tokushima postponed due to COVID-19 cases at Verdy, the last game on the round 27 slate for us is Kofu 1, Mito 1 from the JIT Recycling Stadium. Kofu took the lead about 6 minutes before half-time in this game through Junma Miyazaki. He played in Willian Lira, whose shot was well blocked by Luis Yamaguchi in the Mito goal. But Miyazaki had continued his run into the penalty area and was able to tuck away the loose ball when it broke, kindly for him. 9 minutes into the second period, though, Mito drew level. Kenshin Takagishi's low cross from the right was converted at the far post by the incoming Naoki Tsubaki for 1-1. And that's how it finished. Kofu 1, Mito 1. Both sides fairly comfortable in mid-table. Kofu 14th, Mito 12th, with 15 games of the season to go. Alright, I think that's all the round 27 action taken care of then from my point of view, so please stay tuned. In a moment I'll be back together with Gary. We're going to preview the round 28 fixtures, so yeah, see you in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. I think that's all the round 27 action from J2 covered. So, yeah, John Steele here again. Gary's back with me. We're going to take a quick look at the round 28 games coming up over the weekend. Gary, most of the games are coming up on Saturday, July the 23rd this time. 5 games are kicking off at 6 p.m, including the leaders Niigata. They have a pretty big game. They're hosting the 5th place side Okayama at the Big Swan. The other 6 p.m. games are Iwate against Machida, Mito hosting Oita, and Jeff Chiba welcoming Kofu to Fukuda Denshi Arena. Also, the bottom side at Ryukyu, we talked about a lot in the last section. They face a tough looking trip to Tokushima. And in the 7 p.m. games on Saturday, the big one has to be the clash between 3rd and 4th, Sendai hosting Nagasaki at Yurtek Stadium. Elsewhere, Yamagata host 2nd bottom Gunma. Tochigi host Yamaguchi, and it's 20th hosting 18th as Omiya take on Akita at NAC 5. Gary, if you're free on Saturday, or if the listeners are free, which do you have a couple of recommendations? Where should we be focusing our attentions for a couple of the Saturday games?
Well, most interesting, I guess, is at the top of the table, you said Sendai and Nagasaki. So if Sendai win this, then it's basically top three and then the rest. If Nagasaki can win, then maybe they could haul in Sendai up near the top of the table. But yeah, if Sendai win this, then it's basically 1, 2, 3 and then the rest, I think. Nagasaki will just be back with the also-rans, like Kumamoto and Oita and the rest of us back here scraping to get into the playoffs. So at the top of the table, I would probably take that as game number one. If you're a sadist, maybe go to Omiya and Akita right at the bottom. That is getting, as each week passes, every game gets more tense and tense. Akita are in a poor run of form, I believe. But Omiya, can they stay out of relegation? They usually do it every year, so another interesting game on Saturday. Both of those kick off at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, fair enough. And you mentioned Sadis. I think pretty much everyone who listens to this pod must be Sadis. So we're all freaks here. So, yeah, plenty of us will be watching Omiya against Akita, I think. Yeah, and you mentioned like Akita kind of out of form at the moment and Omiya being out of form all season. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see which way that one goes. And, yeah, we better give Tochigi and Yamaguchi a quick shout, you know, for everyone's neck braces are at the ready. But James Taylor did tell me Tochigi played some really good football in their Emperor's Cup match last midweek, which I think was against Kyoto, if I remember rightly. So perhaps we've been a bit, I've been a bit harsh on Tochigi. It's just kind of like a bit of a running joke on the pod now. I don't really mean it, to be honest. But, yeah, I think their game against Yamaguchi would be good.
That has nil-nil written all over it, no? Tochigi Yamaguchi, no?
You see, I tried to bring it back.
I don't have the lowest scorers in the division. And they have a good defence, but I can't see them scoring, even at home.
Yamaguchi, as you experienced perhaps firsthand earlier this week, yeah, not a high-scoring team either. So, yeah, you might be onto something there, Gary. Although any Tochigi supporters listening, you know, I tried to big you up. Gary wouldn't have it. Okay, how about the games on Sunday, Gary? Two matches to round off the match day at 6 p.m. Second place Yokohama FC make a relatively short trip to Tokyo Verdy, and then at 7 p.m. it's the big one in your part of the world, isn't it? Kumamoto against Kanazawa, 6th against 13th. And what are your predictions? How are you expecting the game against Kanazawa to go?
Again, another tough game at home. We're not the strongest, so if we could scrape a 1-0 win, although if Kanazawa want to sit back, that's probably their best bet, to sit back and try and hit us on the break. So I'm predicting a low-scoring game. I'm just hoping we come out of it 1-0 or 2-1. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw. Kanazawa, they can be obstinate when they want to be. Away from home especially, they've got a pretty good record.
Yeah, I wonder if the fact as well that Kanazawa had to, you know, they were made to look very ordinary in that game against Niigata. That's sometimes that can have a reaction from the players in the next game where they want to show that they're a bit better than they looked. I don't think Kanazawa did anything particularly wrong, but Niigata were just too good for them in the previous match. So perhaps that might mean Kanazawa have a bit more motivation to kind of show what kind of team they really are. But I think that'll be a really good game, actually, because like you said, or like James has mentioned a few times, Kanazawa are a very strong away team. They're good. And Kumamoto, that's also their strength, isn't it? Home has been a tricky place yes, to be. So, I think we'll have eyes on that one as well. Okay, Gary, thanks so much for coming on the pod. It's been a really nice to talk to you. Not quite face to face because we're on Skype, but after interacting, you know, so long on Twitter, it's good to talk. Not in an asynchronous way. What's the opposite of it? Synchronized way. What's your Twitter handle so listeners can follow you if they're not already?
Yeah, you can find me at Gary Irwin, G A R R Y I R W I N, and I'll be at every Roasso home game, even some away games, and you can come and see the soon-to-be J1 club. So I expect an influx of followers.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, well, we'll do our best. We'll do our best to get the influx going as soon as we can. But yeah, thanks so much, Gary. Yeah, it's really appreciate your time and the insight, especially on Kumamoto, which we wanted to cover in detail, earlier in the season, and we've not done it. So thanks so much for that. It's really appreciated. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, John. I just wanted to have that balance, getting Roasso in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, please come back. Please come back any time. We want to catch up, especially at the end of the season. I think we want to see where they finish. So yeah. Thanks a lot, Gary. It's appreciated. Please stay tuned though. That's the end of the J2 segment of the pod for this week. But after a quick musical hit. You're going to hear James Taylor taking control of the J-Talk Short Corner segment. Magic Mike Innes on holiday this week. So yeah, James has got all the latest J3 news coming up in Short Corner. That's coming up next. But from Gary and me, that's all for this week. So enjoy Short Corner. Talk to you soon. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello again, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with J3. I'm James Taylor, standing in for Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be reviewing the action from Match Day 17 and previewing Match Day 18. But first, a few items of transfer news as the window has opened. FC Imabari have signed a Polish striker, Filip Piszczek, as they try to maintain their outside chance of promotion. YSCC have signed Shuntaro Koga from Australian fifth-tier side Caroline Springs George Cross. The midfielder has spent time in England with Leicester City's youth team, the Netherlands, Belgium, and in Japan with Renault for Yamaguchi and FC Karia. Defender Keita Yoshioka has moved from AC Nagano Parcero to J2 promotion chasers Montelio Yamagata, and striker Ryo Watanabe has moved from Azul Claro Numazu to Fujieda My FC. Onto the action then, and we were treated to some rare Friday night J3. As Katale Toyama look to bounce back from their loss to Matsumoto Yamaga, hosting Vanrare Hachinohe. Both teams had chances in the early part of the first half, with Takumi Shimada shooting wide for Hachinohe and Toyama's Nobuyuki Shina heading straight at the keeper. It was the visitors who took the lead. A quickly taken throw-in on the left caught Toyama unprepared, and although keeper Genki Yamada punched the initial shot away, it fell to Naoyuki Yamada on the edge of the area, and he side-footed into the top right corner just before half-time. Shimada should have put Hachinohe 2 up in the 53rd minute, but he toe-poked a shot over when one-on-one with the keeper. Toyama were level in the 66th minute, as substitute Yohei Ono was allowed a free header from a Daichi Matsuoka cross. 12 minutes later, the home side were ahead. A goal kick from Hachinohe was easily collected by Toyama's Junya Imase, who passed to Shota Kawanishi. Kawanishi played in Ono, who shot emphatically into the bottom corner for 2-1. Between those two goals, Ono also headed wide and shot wide. So, Katale back to winning ways. The first time they've scored two in a league game since mid-May. Yohei Ono is their top scorer now with 6 goals from 9 substitute appearances. Hachinohe now on a 3-game losing streak. There were 2 games on Saturday the 16th. First, Iwaki FC welcomed Azul Claro Numazu to J Village. After a goalless first half, Iwaki went ahead in the 52nd minute after a loose ball fell to Eiji Miyamoto to tap in for his first J League goal. The lead was doubled 8 minutes later when Daiki Yamaguchi left his marker behind and headed in Riku Saga's cross. It was 3-0 10 minutes after that as Numazu lost possession in midfield and Kotaro Arima laid the ball off for Hiroto Iwabuchi to score. Iwaki got a fourth in the 73rd minute when a free kick was headed down to the feet of Kaina Tanimura, who couldn't quite believe it as he tapped it in. Numazu wanted an offside call, but there appeared to be a touch from one of their defenders. It finished 4-0 to Iwaki, 4 goals in 21 minutes, propelling them to the top of the table and leaving Numazu with some questions. The other Saturday game was at the Axis Bird Stadium, where Gainari Tottori took on AC Nagano Parcero. Just the 1 goal in this game, and it came in the 2nd minute. Nagano's Masaki Miyasaka shot from a long-range free kick, and it bounced just in front of Tottori keeper Ken Tajiri, who could only chest it into the path of Hiroki Yamamoto, whose header was just out of Tajiri's reach. Parcero had plenty of success down the right early on, and Takuya Miyamoto and Yuma Funabashi both went close. At the other end, Daichi Ishikawa hit the post from 25 yards after Nagano keeper Issei Oichi's very powerful pass smacked into a teammate. And Ishikawa played in Yuya Toguchi, but he skewed his shot horribly wide. Hiroto Sese headed just wide for Tottori in an action-packed first half. In the second half, not so much action. Yuki Morikawa headed onto the post for Nagano, and both keepers made good saves, but it ended 1-0 to Nagano, who are in 7th, 10 points off the promotion spots. This was Tottori's third successive loss, there in 17th. Sunday's action got underway in Miyazaki as the hosts looked to end their poor run of form against in-form Fujieda Mai FC. And when Ko Watahiki got behind his marker and put in a low cross from the left for Yudai Tokunaga to score in the 53rd minute, things looked good for Miyazaki. But Fujieda came back and were level just 6 minutes later as Yuki Oshitani finished a counter-attack. And then two late goals for the visitors saw off Miyazaki. In the 89th minute, Koji Matsumura poked home a loose ball from a free kick. And then in the third minute of stoppage time, Taisuke Mizuno was given too much time and space to place a shot into the top corner for 3-1. That late collapse means Miyazaki have lost 6 in a row and are 13th, while Fujieda are 4th and on a 4-game winning run. Matsumoto Yamaga are also on a 4-game winning run, their first since 2018, thanks to a 1-0 home win over Fukushima United. It was an early goal. Ayumu Yokoyama crossed from the right for Sho Sumida to score with just 2 minutes played. Yokoyama was heavily involved throughout, forcing several good saves from Kaito Yamamoto in the Fukushima goal. And Matsumoto's failure to convert their chances meant that, just like last week, they were in for a nervy finish and had goalkeeper Victor to thank for a good stop on Yuta Nobe in the 83rd minute. Matsumoto move up to second behind Iwaki on goal difference. Fukushima are 11th and winless in 8 league games. Ehime FC are still in the pack chasing Iwaki and Matsumoto. They travelled to Kagawa to take on fellow Shikoku side Kamatamare Sanuki. A brace from Riki Matsuda gave the Mighty Mikans all 3 points. His first came after a quarter of an hour. A driving run through midfield by Motoki Ohara allowed Matsuda to steal away into space at the back post and slot a shot under the keeper. Those two combined for the second goal too, just after the hour, when Ohara crossed from the left and Matsuda headed in from 12 yards. Matsuda had another couple of headed chances, one wide and one saved, but Sanuki had very little to offer going forward, so Ehime won 2-0. They're 6th now, while Sanuki are 15th. Girovan's Kitakyushu handed FC Gifu their third straight loss with a late goal from Ryo Sato. Taiga Maekawa opened the scoring for Kitakyushu from the penalty spot in the 22nd minute after Tomoya Ugajin tripped Sō Fujitani. The lead didn't last long as Junya Tanaka chested down Ryohei Yoshihama's long ball over the top and shot past Yuki Kato. Yoshihama and Ryoteo Onishi both went close for Gifu either side of the break, but Kitakyushu had another penalty midway through the second half when Yoshihiro Shoji bundled over Takuya Inui. Maekawa aimed for the same spot, bottom left, but this time Gifu keeper Cholhwan Ono was able to get to it. That save was in vain though, as in the 89th minute, a cross-field pass by a Gifu defender was intercepted. Maekawa fed the ball to Kotaro Fujikawa on the right, and his cross was headed in by Sato to give Kitakyushu a 2-1 win and move them up to 12th. Gifu were 9th and staring at another year in J3. And finally, SC Sagamihara dented Kagoshima United's promotion push and ruined their unbeaten home record with a 1-0 win down in Kyushu. The home side dominated this one, but a combination of strong Sagamihara defending and poor Kagoshima finishing kept the game goalless, and Sagamihara provided a sucker punch in the 80th minute. A ball forward from the right side of midfield found Jungo Fujimoto on the edge of the area. He passed to Tsubasa Ando to his left, and Ando scored. Sagamihara's first win in 6 moved them up to 14th. Kagoshima a third, 2 points behind the top two. The round 17 match between Imabari and YSCC was postponed due to a COVID outbreak at the Yokohama club. That's the action rounded up, so let's take a look at the standings. It's tight at the top. Iwaki are first and Matsumoto are second, both with 37 points from 17 games. Iwaki are ahead on goal difference though, theirs is 23, compared to Matsumoto's 13. In third is Kagoshima on 35 points, and Fujieda My FC are fourth with 32. Down at the bottom, in 15th, we have Kamatamare Sanuki with 17 points from 17 games. In 16th is Hachinohe with 13 points. Tottori are 17th with 12 points. And bottom of the pile with 8 points from 16 games is YSCC. Time to look ahead to round 18, which is going to be played on Saturday the 23rd and Sunday the 24th of July. Most of the games are on Saturday. Numazu welcome arrested Imabari. Fukushima play Tottori. Fujieda take on Kitakyushu, Sagamihara play Ehime, Kagoshima make the long trip north to play Hachinohe, Gifu face Sanuki, and the big one is at 4:30, first v second, Iwaki against Matsumoto. Then on Sunday, YSCC are back in action against Toyama, and Nagano play Miyazaki. And that's it for this week's mini pods. Mike will be back next week, hopefully. So until then, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and grab the dream, folks.